Well, this week, 100 years ago, a revolution raged in the streets of Petrograd, now known as St. Petersburg, in Russia. Vladimir Lenin and Leon Trotsky led the revolutionaries in an assault on the palace and swept their Bolshevik party to power. Lenin died 7 years later, his vision of a utopia still unrealised, and Trotsky was expelled by the new communist dictator Joseph Stalin and spent his last days in Mexico. That's the premise for In the Blue House, an historical novel by the Edinburgh writer Megan Delahunt.
In the Blue House really deals with the last years of Leon Trotsky, the Russian revolutionary, and his time in Mexico. And his time where he meets the artists Diego Rivera and Frida Kahlo. And in that book I was really playing with a lot of historical rumour, and there's this alleged affair between Trotsky and Frida Kahlo. And I remember finding out about this when I was in Australia in 1989. I'd been to see an exhibition of Frida Kahlo's, and I was just so shocked that she would have had an affair with Trotsky. And so I think that seeded the idea for me.
Diary of Leon Trotsky in Exile, Coyoacan, Mexico, 1940.
And the Blue House refers to the house that Frida Kahlo lived in with Diego Rivera.
Amor y dolor, Frida says to me when it is all over. Love and pain. After weeks of furtive notes in books and furtive meetings at her sister's house, Frida arrives at my hill retreat with a green rebozo over her shoulder and a panatella between her lips. She has grown tired of me, she says. Your life is like a metronome, but you cannot control the heart. Her husband doesn't know. And she wants it kept that way. He threatened to kill her last lover with a knife. She has proved her point. She has now evened the score with Diego, who had put her through torment when he slept with her sister.
So Trotsky had, after Lenin's death, you know, had different views on the way the revolution should go. But by that time, Stalin was in the ascendancy, and he had his own particular viewpoint and was consolidating power and felt very threatened by Trotsky, who'd been part of the inner circle around Lenin. And so they were really forced out. For a time, he lived on a little island off Turkey, Principe, and then was trying to find exile in different places around Europe. Britain refused him. In the end, there was a progressive government in Mexico that gave him asylum. A lot of progressive people in America, in Mexico, and so on, admired him and what he'd been through. And I think Trotsky had his own charisma. You know, people talk about how he was very charismatic and could be very charming. He was obviously very intelligent. He was also very ruthless. Also, by then, he was in exile. He's older. He's more vulnerable. He's had, you know, assassination attempts on his life. So he's going to be a slightly different person from the one who led the Red Army. You know, he's not in his halcyon days anymore, you know. He's in a little backwater in Mexico City, you know, hiding out with a bunch of artists, really.
When I have finished speaking, he clasps my hand and says,
Señora, in future everyone will be an artist, like yourself. We will create the conditions for it. There will be no such thing as the individual artist. Homes will be decorated, murals on every public wall, figures made in celebration.
I'd spent my late teenage and early 20s in a Trotskyist organization in Australia. And so I knew a lot about Trotsky, and then I'd left that life completely behind. I'd realized that not giving everything over to a totalizing ideology that tried to explain every aspect of life. And that's what Marxism was for Trotsky, was really important, that you had to make space for the spirit, you had to have time to reflect, you had to have time for silence, you had to have time to make art.
I've heard it all before, and I say to him, but in this future, where everyone and no one is an artist, there will still be a small child who wants to carve something special from a branch, or a young girl who'll pick up a paintbrush for herself. something private, because it's inside a person, and not everyone has this feeling to make something out of nothing.
This elderly revolutionary is quite entranced by this young, I think she was about 40 then, so she was a couple of decades younger than him, you know, this young, vibrant artist, and she represented something that he was no longer living, I guess. And I think there was definitely an infatuation from his part. And from Frida's point of view, I think she was trying to settle scores with Diego's womanizing, you know. So, no, I'm not completely convinced that it happened, but I think perhaps it got close to it. Coyoacan, 21st of August, 1940. As the blood weeps from his head wound, Lev Davidovich looks up from the floor of his study and the portrait of Frida kaleidoscopes in front of him. Amor y dolor, Frida had written in 1937 after it was all over. Love and pain. 3 years later, as he lies dying, the details rise up. Not the details of the glorious Red October, not the details of the Kronstadt uprising, the bodies bloating in the snow. Not the details of all the years in exile, the death of everyone dear to him. No. It is the small, private details of the end of the affair that he remembers.
Megan Della Hunt reading from her novel In the Blue House, and that lovely piece produced by Mayuki Yokoranta. And this week you can enjoy lots of RN programs commemorating the Russian Revolution and its legacy. And if you missed them on air, you can catch up with all those stories on the RN homepage. Just look for Reformation to Revolution.